This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. Last week, the Paxton Media Group, based in Paducah, Kentucky, officially purchased the Durham Herald Sun. The Herald Sun had been owned for more than a century by the Rollins family. Within hours of the contract signing last week, the Durham Herald Sun's top management team was let go. Altogether, there were more than three dozen people who lost their jobs that day, and more cuts are said to be coming. It used to be that many major daily papers in North Carolina were owned by North Carolina families, but that has changed. At the moment, there remains one independently owned major daily newspaper in the state, the Fayetteville Observer. The buying up of family businesses by larger chains is happening in many an industry in the U.S. But what does it mean when the business is a newspaper, and what does it mean right here in North Carolina? We're exploring that this hour, from the daily papers to the weeklies, which are more likely to be independently owned. And we welcome your calls this hour. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. That's 1-877-962-9862 if you want to join the conversation. And we have a number of people with us today to talk about newspapers in North Carolina. We start out talking with Bob Ashley, who is the newly appointed editor of the Durham Herald Sun newspaper. Thanks for being with us today, Bob.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Well, you've been on the job for 1 week, and I have to imagine that given what we just explained here happened, there were the firings of your predecessor and others in top management. It could not have been an easy week.
It's been a difficult week for folks involved. There's no question about that. I don't think a situation like this is ever easy for the people that are involved in it. But, you know, it's a good staff there and good folks, and I think, as you can see, the paper has continued to be strong every day, and we look forward to it being that way for some time to come.
Yeah. So why were the cuts necessary? And so quickly after the newspaper, after the Paxton Group took over ownership, it was within hours.
Sure, Melinda. And I'm not going to talk much about that. You know, our corporate folks issued their statement, and I'm not going to add much to that. The paper had been losing money. We faced the need to make some fairly significant cost savings. And, of course, with a newspaper, personnel is the largest single expense, and that's where we looked.
So how then do you make money at the Durham Herald Sun?
Well, it's, you know, the good news is that this is a booming market. It's had the newspaper industry as a whole has had some tough times, and certainly been reflected here. But we feel very, very good about the market here. It's robust in Durham. It's robust in the Research Triangle. It's robust in Chapel Hill, and we think the going forward. That our success will come from developing new sources of revenue, being mindful of costs. We've got a new ed director who's very, very good and very aggressive at developing revenue sources. And we're optimistic going forward that this is going to be a good market for us.
So advertising is often tied to what else the newspaper has to offer in terms of editorial, the content of the paper. Do you have any plans for expanded coverage, for any more in-depth coverage? Okay. What are the plans?
Well, it's a little early to really get into specifics. As you might imagine, I've been here, I think, now 8 days, if you count last Monday and today, and still getting my feet on the ground. Our commitment is very strong to local news. I think the Herald Sun has always been distinguished by its local coverage, but we plan to emphasize that even more. We think, particularly for small and medium-sized papers and most markets in this day and time of internet news sources and 24-hour news cycle television, that what we have that's distinctive is our coverage of the Durham community, the Chapel Hill community, and the region around us. And I think that's where the emphasis is going to be. We've done in the past here, I think, some distinguished project work. We'll continue that. But we'll also be looking for ways to emphasize the day-to-day life and times of Durham and the area and reflect that in the newspaper.
Still, there were people who were cut, and it wasn't just top management. It was people who do the day-to-day reporting at the newspaper. So how are you able to expand coverage or do more interesting things there that would draw more people to read the paper and more advertisers?
Yeah, actually, when the dust settles, the people who actually are on the street doing the reporting have been relatively untouched by this. I think this is right. I'm sort of doing the math in my head. I think there were really only two positions. And really only one position that was a pure reporting position that we ended up reducing. We had some reassignments, and we'll have some realignments of people. But our intention was, and I think we'll succeed, in managing to keep a lot of horsepower on the street, covering the news, writing the news, being out and about every day, and I don't think there'll be much difference there. I think we will see, try to refine how we do things, And some of it is just frankly coming in with a fresh eye and saying, have we thought about this, have we thought about that, and trying to pinpoint and drive that coverage forward. But the actual reporting resources of the paper have been, particularly given the overall thrust of what we did, have been relatively untouched.
We're talking this hour about newspapers in North Carolina. With us is Bob Ashley. He is the new editor of the Durham Herald Sun, which last week was officially purchased by the Paxton Media Group out of Paducah, Kentucky. And we're talking this hour about that trend that has been happening for some time in North Carolina among the newspapers. At the moment, there remains one daily, the Fayetteville Observer, that is owned by a family based here in North Carolina. What we might call independently owned. And we're taking your calls this hour on the subject. The number is 1-877-962-9862. With us here in the studio as well is Jock Lauderer, who was a newspaper publisher for 15 years. And along with some partners, he started two small newspapers in western North Carolina. I understand, Jock, that one of them crashed, but one of them is up and well. It is the Daily Courier in Forest City.
Yes, now actually owned by Paxton.
Okay, there we go. Well, we'll be talking about that in just a moment. Jock is now a professor of journalism at UNC Chapel Hill and director of the Carolina Media Project, author of the textbook Community Journalism, The Personal Approach. And as I mentioned, he's here in the studio. So were you at this, you were at the newspaper, the Daily Courier, when the Paxton Group purchased it?
I had been gone for 15 years then, so mm-hmm. I was not in place, but was able to find out, of course, about how the transition went, just through personal connections, of course.
And how did
the transition
go?
Was different, of mm-hmm. course. And that's the interesting thing that I see is the difference in the Paxton's approach at Durham as opposed to Forest City. Bob and I also go way back, so this is going to be kind of fun. When Paxton came to Forest City to buy that paper, and keep in mind this is a 10,000 circulation afternoon community daily, quite different from a Durham scenario. They came in with what I call the good cop, bad cop approach. There wasn't turnover. There wasn't big layoffs because actually the paper didn't need fixing in many ways. And then over a period of time, transitions did occur. So it's quite a different approach, it feels like to me, where they've come in, and I'm calling this the bad cop, good cop approach. You come in, you know, you do your worst, and then you try to get everybody back on board, and that's just a different way of coming at it.
So, but we're the Daily the Durham Herald Sun is a bigger newspaper than the paper you were at in
yes,
Forest City.
And let's say a word about the market. I'm sure Phil Meyer is going to want to chime in on this when that time comes, and that is that Durham's circulation of 50,000 is a little bit misleading. Durham has a big, hefty Sunday circulation tacked on, and so I would throw in that circulation, which kind of kicks it up over the 50,000 mark, and that makes a difference. That 50,000 circulation line in the sand for those of us who study this is the dividing line between big and little. And when we say that, Melinda, it's more of a categorical distinction. It's not the pejorative to say that a paper is small or it's big for that matter. So Durham's right on the cusp, and that's been one of the fascinating things to watch over the years is the character of the Herald Sun. Sometimes it acts like a major metro, and then sometimes it acts like a small community daily.
Now, does that hurt the bottom line?
I'll let someone else address that.
Okay.
As a reader, I find it curious. I have often compared Durham to a teenager. In many sense, when I say Durham, the newspaper, looking in the mirror, going, oh, look at me, I'm this, and then, oh my gosh, what's that on my face? You know, that can't quite make up its mind to me as a reader whether it's a community daily or is it a major metro player?
Mm-hmm. Well, Bob Ashley, what do you say to that?
Sure. That's an interesting comparison, Jack, although I'm not sure about the part there about the face, but it got a little to me. But I think it's a fair comparison in some ways. It seems to me, again, coming in with all of a week here under my belt, that the Durham Market and the Durham Herald Sun is, in fact, by and large, a large community newspaper, but in a very sophisticated and very diverse community. And that's what makes the challenge, I think, for those of us at the paper particularly interesting. I mean, this is not a 50,000 circulation newspaper in, you know, someplace in Kansas where the grain mill is the biggest employer in town. The biggest employer in town here is a major university with a national reputation, and the major after that, the major facility is an expanding medical center. So we have a diverse audience with international ties, international interests, international connections, and of course we also have, you know, the old Durham that's been here since before I was here in school back in the 60s, and it's an interesting market to cover because of that. And I think it does mean that we are by and large a community newspaper, but we have some very, very distinct and special expectations because of the nature of the community that we serve.
Does that make it a challenge, though, at the bottom line?
Well, pretty much everything is a challenge at the bottom line in newspaper in these days. I don't know that there's anything distinctive about this. The challenge is to find the revenue to support what we want to do and to do the kind of newspapering that we intend to do and that I want to do.
And we'll continue our conversation looking more at the bottom lines of newspapers and what you're looking for in the newspaper you read. We welcome your calls. The number is 1-877-962-9862. All of that ahead on The State of Things. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkava. Today we're talking about the newspaper industry in North Carolina. In the studio with us are Jack Lauderer, a professor of journalism at UNC Chapel Hill, and Jock Lauderer, I'm sorry, and he is author of the textbook Community Journalism, The Personal Approach. Also here is the new editor of the Durham Herald Sun, Bob Ashley, and joining us now is Phil Meyer, who spent 23 years with Knight Ridder Newspapers, four of them in Miami, 16 at the Washington Bureau, 3 years as a corporate executive. He's now a professor of journalism at UNC Chapel Hill and author of The Vanishing Newspaper, Saving Journalism in the Information Age. Welcome, Phil Meyer.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, you've been listening to our conversation. Our hook for the conversation is what happened in the past week at the Durham Herald Sun, where some new owners from Kentucky took over ownership from the Rollins family, who'd owned it for more than a century. First act was to clear the decks of top management. About 40-some-odd people lost their jobs. I understand that it could be about 81, ultimately, who lose their jobs.
I don't know the number exactly, but I think that's what we said. That's correct.
Right. And so we're talking about the trend here in the state, that we're down to one daily newspaper that is owned by a North Carolina concern. It's all out of state now. What is your take on that? Is that necessarily something to worry about?
Well, yes, of course it is. When I came here in 1981, there were 5 daily newspapers with home delivery in Chapel Hill. And I said at the time that that will eventually shake down to 1. And I am so glad to have been proven wrong in the case of the Durham Herald, because it's hung in there and survived despite some scrappy competition from the News and Observer based in Raleigh. Historically, newspapers have been declining since the 1920s. Newspapers peaked about 1922, when circulation was more than 100% of households. It was like 135. And now it's under 50 nationally. So what's been happening is that newspapers have been slowly replaced by other media. And the consistent thing is that specialized media have been doing better than general media. Radio has survived because it caters to many specialized audiences, like the one that's listening to us right now. The huge national programs of my youth are gone.
So it's more narrowcasting than broadcasting.
Yes, and that's happening in other kinds of media, too. It's happening in print media. The newspapers that are doing the best are the local weeklies, with a very specific specialized audience. And since World War II, that process has accelerated as new printing technology came on and made it possible to produce niche publications cheaply. And that affected advertising. Newspapers used to get 71% of their revenue from advertising and the rest from circulation. Now they're so desperate for circulation that they have to cut the price, and what you pay for the newspaper doesn't even pay for the paper that it's printed on. And the composition of advertising revenue has changed, too. It used to be mostly retail and national, and it was only 18% classified. Now it's 40% classified, which is part of the pattern of more specialized information doing better. Classified is as specialized as you can get. Now along comes the Internet, which is the best classified medium ever invented, and it's starting to eat newspaper's lunch in that area.
Craigslist and other...
Yeah, Craigslist is a formidable thing, and
it's free.
Which
is a national classified effort online.
Right, so. Right. And Monster.com has been a threat in the help wanted advertising. So it's impossible for newspapers to maintain their historic profitability. And they're very reluctant to let go of that, and so they're tempted. And every company that I know about is following this temptation to raise prices and reduce quality and sort of hollow out the value, the market position, as carefully and thoroughly as they can, because they're really not trying to preserve it in the long run. They've given up in the long run. And I think that's what's happening. Business school professors even have a name for that. They call it harvesting market position. And that's what you do when there's a substitute technology that is going to take your place. You raise price, cut quality, and get as much money out of as you can before the institution dies.
Is that why we got into this business, though? It's to harvest market position?
No, well, that's not why we got into this position. And that's why those of us in journalism education are so torn, because we're not sure what kind of a world we're preparing our students for.
Bob, actually, that's a rather pessimistic view, picture that Phil Myers painting here.
Well, it is a pessimistic view, but it's not one that I, and parts of it I wouldn't quarrel with at all. I mean, I think that the challenge that printed newspapers face today is a formidable one, and has been for some time. As Phil mentions, for two or three generations, we've been struggling with this. I think that there still remains, at least as far as I can see on the horizon, a decent future for newspapers. I think we have to be smart about what we do. I think we have to be prudent about what we can do. But I also think there is room for growth, and there's room for still a vigorous printed press. Now, will that be true 30 years from now, 40 years from now? I'm not sure. Printing technology changed dramatically in the last 30 or 40 years. As Phil mentioned, it's changing even more dramatically right now with the delivery of lots of news to your computer screen and over the Internet. And I think that presents a particular challenge for those of us in this business. And long term, I think despite blogs, I think despite people's great wealth of information at their fingertips, they're still going to be looking for somebody to package, make some sense out of, organize and present that for them. And at the local level, nobody's going to be able to do that like small and medium market newspapers.
Okay. Well, we're curious what you want from your local newspaper. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. That's 1-877-962-9862. Let's go to a quick call right now from Fiona in Durham. Hi there, Fiona.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm Fiona Morgan, and I'm a reporter for The Independent Weekly. And so I'm glad to have the opportunity to ask some questions here, Mr. Ashley, because you didn't return my phone calls last week.
Right.
I was wondering, you said at the beginning of the program that only one or possibly two people in the newsroom had been affected by the cuts, but as I understand it, John Cole has been fired, the nationally recognized cartoonist, Al Carson, a food writer, Michael Petruccelli, a reporter, Ross Taylor, who's a photographer who won Photographer of the Year last year, a religion writer named Flo Johnson.
Question, Fiona, is?
Well, and Jim Wise, who is the heart and soul.
The
question is, I mean, what is the local coverage going to be, and how are we going to recognize the Durham Herald Sun with so many people down, so many people gone that are just what we consider to be the heart and soul of the Herald Sun? And also...
I'm going to give you a chance to answer. Yeah. Bob Ashley?
Yeah, I sort of lost the last part of that, Fiona, but I think what I said at the beginning of the program was that the people who were on the streets actually reporting and writing local news were relatively less affected. I think there were only one, possibly two, depending on exactly how we restructure some things, positions who were actually involved in reporting as opposed to writing columns or writing about specialized areas such as food. And beyond that, I'm simply not going to get into discussing individuals and individual cases. It's not fair to the folks involved, and it's not fair to the folks who are still there to make those kind of comparisons. So I think I'll just leave it at that.
But there is one issue in there that I'd like to pull out, and that is John Cole was a cartoonist at the paper. Are you going to have replace him, or are you going to be doing locally generated cartoons, or?
Well, the honest answer to that is no. I mean, I think in a market this size, a newspaper this size, this was maybe, certainly one of the few, may well have been the only paper this size that I'm aware of with a local editorial cartoonist. And as we faced the decisions we were making, this had nothing to do with John Cole as a person or John Cole as a talent, but just the decision that that was not a position that, given what our reality was, that we thought we could sustain it at a newspaper in a market this size.
Melinda,
Meyer and then Jock Lauder. Right.
That's a national trend. The current issue of Nieman Reports has a piece about the decline in newspaper cartooning. It's an easy place to cut because cartoonists are expensive and they only fill up so much space per day, and they make people mad a lot of times. And so it's very tempting to make your cut there. And it's one more sign of public service being lost. In my book, I try to make the case, a business case, for maintaining social responsibility in public service, and I show that newspapers that are the most trusted are doing the best job of resisting the decline in circulation penetration. They're not overcoming it, but they're retarding the decline, at least.
Are they making money?
Oh, yes. They're making more money than they ever did, because this harvesting strategy works for a while.
Okay. Jock Lauder?
A quick positive note. You said earlier that all but one of the state's dailies are chain-owned. That's not quite correct. There are 48 dailies in the state, and of the 48, eight of those are the major metros, and that's those eight are really the ones we're talking about here, Fayetteville being the one independent. Bob, I guess my observation is one that an old publisher or editor would have. You know, when you let go not just maybe your best photographer in Ross Taylor, but the best photographer arguably in North Carolina, what sort of message does that send to a newsroom? I mean, the day after all this came down, I picked up the paper, and I've been losing sleep over this. I've been so personally sort of upset. It's like, how did they put out a newspaper the day after all this came down? I mean, Ross Taylor is just a terrific photographer. It sort of boggles the mind.
Sure. And I think the truth is that, you know, we've got a great staff there going forward, and they did put out newspapers the next day and the day after. And I think newspapers that in the last few days have reflected a number of strong local stories that have characterized the Herald Sun and will continue to. You know, again, Jock, the difficult thing here is to discuss any particular individual case is to run the risk of doing a disservice to the individuals involved, and I just don't think I can get into that without running that risk. We've got some fine photojournalists still on the staff, and we continue to have and will continue to have a fine photojournalism report, I believe.
When decisions are made, though, on letting people go, sometimes people who've developed quite a portfolio, a following, whether they're cartoonists or photographers, and I won't use individual names, but just if we just take that as the argument here, they may be higher in salary. And is that an indication is that one thing that leads to them being let go? Because they may be veterans and so are higher paid, and the bottom line calls for, well, why would I pay one person X when I can get one and a half or two people for that?
Well, in fact, not really. Some of the folks that have gone had relatively high salaries. Some of the folks who are gone were relatively lower in the scale. It really was not a factor that we looked at.
Okay. 1-877-962-9862 is our number. JR's in Durham. Hi, JR.
Hey, guys.
Hi there.
Hey, earlier you mentioned the threat to the newspaper's classified advertising from sites like Monster and Craigslist. And I know that recently three of the big newspaper companies joined up to create a website, careerbuilder.com, to compete as far as the recruitment classified advertising goes online. My question is, what are your plans for, you know, being a local paper for Paxton to kind of combat that? Are you going to join up with those other companies or kind of do your own thing?
Yeah, Chair, that's a subject I can't speak to that because I'm just not familiar with what our plans are in that regard. Quite honestly, I mean, I oversee the news and editorial product, and while I'm familiar with our advertising plans, I'm probably less familiar here than I would be if I'd been here more than a week.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how that would work because, Phil Meyer, you pointed out Craigslist was free, mm-hmm. and if the newspapers have this consortium of getting together to do a list like that, how are they going to make money off that? How can they compete if they're,
well,
they would charge?
I have a theory about that. Do you have time to hear it?
Okay, briefly. Yeah, yeah.
A newspaper's main product isn't information, it's not news, it's not advertising, it's influence. It produces two kinds of influence, commercial influence, which is for sale, and societal influence, which is not for sale. But the stronger the societal influence, the greater the commercial, the greater the value of the commercial influence. So if a newspaper is respected in its community, if it helps form a social and commercial public sphere, then people will naturally go to that central marketplace. The newspaper has to get into the online business, but if it can keep the brand name of the newspaper with it, then it can fight Craigslist and Monster.com and the others. So the caller is absolutely right. You can't beat them. You've got to join them.
Okay. Jock Lauder, anything to add there?
No. If I could just pick up on one thing Phil said there that I wanted to, because I wanted to back up to something about when he mentioned societal influence. I think, Phil, earlier you mentioned in terms of changing newspaper ownership and all public service and commitment. And there's no wavering and no change at all in the Herald Sun's commitment to public service and to being involved in and being part of the community. And I think over the long haul, that's going to go a long way. Toward displaying who we are and what we are in this market.
I have a question there. The Bob and the publisher and your CFO, is that correct? You're the director of advertising?
Director of advertising, right.
Are all from Owensboro. You could call them the Kentucky Mafia if you want to. It would be a little dramatic. The three of you ride in town.
Right.
You lay off all these people, and then now you're going to bolster all this community spirit. Go Durham. How are you going to make that sale to a staff and, right. and to a newsroom after these cuts and
sure.
these sort of actions?
Chuck, I don't minimize the challenge that you outlined there, but while the circumstances may be different, this is the third time I've come into a community as a new editor. And I think both in State College and Owensboro, the record would reflect that both I as an individual and the newspapers that I edited were deeply involved in and deeply concerned with the community. It's not as if we come here with no ties. Bob Childress, the publisher, is in fact a native of Durham. And while he is in fact a Kentuckian, or was a Kentuckian until last week, he had been in several papers, including Danville, Virginia, most recently before that, frequently came back to Durham. Has ties here. I, of course, grew up 120, 125 miles from here, went to school here, worked in Raleigh close by in the first part of my career. So I don't think, while the area certainly changed, we're certainly not coming into an area that I would feel is unknowledgeable about or as unfamiliar with as
but
if I'd
Jock's,
be dropped in
but,
Nome, Alaska, for example.
But Jock's point is that you come in and the first act was to let people go, to lay them off, to fire them, and then how do you turn that around? That seems to be, it's a big corner to turn.
It is a corner to turn, and we'll turn it, I think, by tending to our knitting and putting out a good newspaper every day and being out in the community and seeing people. I should point out that there are a number of people with long tenure here that are still there. The senior newsroom management team, the managing editor, Bill Stagg, who's been here for many years, two assistant managing editors, one of whom is, like myself, a Duke graduate, are both in place and very much involved in putting out the newspaper. There are a lot of people in that newsroom that have long and deep ties in Durham and in the area, and they're still there, and they're still doing good work every day.
Mm-hmm. Phil Meyer?
When I was at Knight Ridder, and we bought a new newspaper, we had a policy that I called creeping nightism. Changes were very slow and very gradual.
Right.
Sometimes we would send in one person, not even the top person. I remember, I don't remember this, but I know the story. When Jack and Jim Knight bought the Miami Herald, they sent Ben Maidenberg from Akron down to be the head of the copy desk. And he was there several months, and then he called Jack and said, I just found out that the editor is taking bribes from a public official. And Jack Knight said, fire him. So the head of the copy desk fired the editor of the paper. But the reason for the gradual policy was the Knights were always improving it. They bought papers that they intended to improve, and people tended to sell them papers because they know they would be a good home. Machiavelli once said that when you do good things, stretch them out slowly over a long period of time. And when you do bad things, do them instantly in one horrible spasm. So you guys in Durham are following Machiavelli, but it makes me think you intend to do bad things.
Well, I don't know quite how to respond to that, Phil, other than to say that I don't know that the Machiavelli comparison is one that would hold up over time. And, you know, Phil, it's important to note a couple of things. One is that, you know, there's sort of no good way to do this, and you can do it slowly and prolong the agony for people, or you can do it quickly and get it behind you and move on. The other thing is that, of course, the Knight Ridder that you and I worked for, and I'm a former Knight Ridderite, too, in Charlotte and in State College, Pennsylvania, probably isn't the same Knight Ridder that you see today. And I believe it was Knight Ridder, Phil, that went into Contra Costa, California, if I remember correctly, and on the first day fired everybody and made them reapply for their jobs. That's certainly another model for newspaper acquisitions and not one that we chose to follow here.
There's a book that's going to come out in a couple of months about Knight Ridder by Buzz Merritt, who's a North Carolinian and a UNC graduate. And the title is Nightfall.
We'll be looking for that. We are talking today with Phil Meyer from the UNC School of Journalism. Also with us, Jock Lauderer, who teaches at UNC Chapel Hill as well. And Bob Ashley, the new editor of the Durham Herald Sun. We welcome your calls. 1-877-962-9862 is our number. And just ahead, we'll be talking with the editor of a small weekly newspaper that's doing well. All that just ahead on The State of Things. 1-877-962-9862. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. We're talking this hour about the newspapers in North Carolina, the health of that industry. With us in the studio are Bob Ashley. He is the new news editor of the Durham Herald Sun newspaper. Jock Lauderer is here, too. He is professor of journalism at UNC Chapel Hill. And Phil Meyer is another professor of journalism at UNC Chapel Hill and author of The Vanishing Newspaper, Saving Journalism in the Information Age. We're taking your calls at 1-877-962-9862. Our discussion was set in motion last week by the new ownership of the Durham Herald Sun, now owned by a company from Kentucky after more than a century in the Rollins family. The Durham Herald Sun joins just about every other major daily newspaper in North Carolina now having out-of-state ownership. The one that is independently owned of the major dailies is the Fayetteville Observer. There are, however, a number of small weekly papers that are owned by or independently owned. Ken Ripley is editor and publisher of one of them. He's the editor and publisher of the Spring Hope Enterprise. It covers southern Nash County, has a circulation of 25,000, and he's won a number of awards. Ken Ripley is on the line with us right now. Thanks for being here, Ken.
Thank you for having me. Let me quickly correct something, though. I wish I had a circulation of 25,000.
Did I say 1,000?
2,500.
That's my bad. 2,500. I'm just not reading the copy that I had here. 2,500. Well, what would you do if you had 25,000?
I'd be celebrating every day.
So weekly papers are a different ballgame from the daily newspapers.
They are and they're not.
Okay, how so?
Well, almost everything... I agree with almost everything that's been said, and especially the things that Phil said, but I have to note that all newspapers are community-oriented in some way or another, just the size of the community change is. And again, we're a small paper, so we serve our community, and I used to joke that I have a monopoly because no one else wanted it. I serve my area in a way that no one else does, so as long as I do that, and I do it with the same quality that the others have talked about, I'll do fine.
But the
other dynamics that they've talked about also affect us just in slightly different ways.
Which other dynamics? I mean, about the bottom line?
Yeah, the bottom line is always important. I'm not as affected by some of the changes as the big dailies are because I'm always struggling. I don't have some of the... One reason the smaller papers can do better is because we're under the radar of some of the big technological changes right now. It's the larger papers that are more the targets of the internet and that type of thing, even though we're starting to see the effects of it and we benefit from it.
Do you have you don't have an online version of the Spring Hope Enterprise?
Not yet. No, I'm on smalltownnewspapers.com, but they scan the thing and people can see it there. And I understand that people are starting to read it. So I'm working on something, but it takes a while when you're small.
Indeed. What are some of the stories you'd cover that that would be under the radar screen of, I guess, the bigger papers in your area would be the Rocky Mount paper or the News and Observer?
Well, our coverage, as are all the others, is oriented to what's going on in the community. So a small thing that would even make the inside paper inside of the larger paper could be our front page article, because it's important to people. I'm struggling to think of an example.
Well, how about the big?
It could be something as simple as garbage collection changing.
Hey, Ken.
This is Jock.
This
Lutter.
Is Jock.
Hey, Jock.
How about that big cabbage?
Yeah, last week I ran a huge cabbage on the front page.
Was there a controversy, or was somebody proud of having grown it?
No, they were just, it was a group handing out cabbages. It was handing out food. Okay. It happened to be the big cabbage, and it was a great picture.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, you know, it strikes me that when you're in a smaller community, as the newspaper guy, you're not just the person who's in the office someplace putting out the newspaper, but people know you. Much more than than say reporters who work for the bigger newspapers in the state know all the people they write about. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if that can that make it more difficult to write stories that are critical stories and be critical.
Yes, it can make it very difficult, especially when it's a sad story or a controversial story and you know the people involved, because it hurts you as well. I mean, it's something you don't like to do, and it's extremely painful in those times. But on the other hand, it gives me an edge. It gives me an edge to other reporters, because I do know more about the situation and can write with more insight about it, and that is appreciated by the sources. It also has more impact, because they know me, because it's read by their friends and neighbors. So if I write an editorial, it generally has more impact than it would if it's even in the News and Observer, where they might get more excited because they see something in the big paper. But I can have more of an impact in my community because they know me.
Right. Now, advertisements are a main source of income for a newspaper. So I've often wondered about small newspapers, whether they're more beholden to the advertisers. You wouldn't see an article critical of somebody who's been advertising for years in the paper.
Well, I'd be lying if I didn't say I didn't think about it, but I don't let it affect me. I live on the edge so much anyway with advertising that I've ceased to worry about that. If I relied entirely on local advertising, I wouldn't be here.
So we
have our share of national and state advertising and institutional advertising as well. So I do what I have to do. And again, if you're fair, if you're honest, if the paper is good, I think Bob or Jock said that, or both. You know, if the paper is a substantially well-respected and good quality, You go on. People accept it. If you make a mistake, you say you're sorry, and they generally will forgive you. And if you're doing your job, they will get over it.
Okay. Well, I hope you'll stand by while we continue our conversation here, Ken. Jock Lauterer had something he wanted to add. Jock?
Well, I just want to make sure listeners realize Ripley and folks like him, 141 weeklies in North Carolina, and of those, 73 are still independently owned. So 52% of the weeklies in this state are still independently owned. And a final word about spineless editorial pages that sometimes are stereotyped at weeklies. Ripley, you know this is the case. Ripley writes no holds barred editorials.
Okay. Well, I'll be going to smalltownnewspapers.com to check them out. Stand by, Ken, and we go to the phones now. David is with us from Greensboro. Hi, David.
Hello.
Hi. Did you have a question or comment for our guests?
Really wanted to, a couple, a question. If the panelists there are familiar with what's going on in Greensboro with the News and Record, with their I suppose you call it, an experiment in open source journalism, how they're involving weblogs and other citizen journals within the paper, or looking at doing so. And I was wondering if the Herald Sun has any plans to incorporate such things as that as well.
Bob Ashley.
David, I'm actually not familiar with what's going on at the News and Record. I haven't been back here long enough. I'll be looking at that with some interest. I think the whole area of weblogs and blogs and all of that is an area that all of us are wrestling with, kind of what that means for daily journalism and how we should approach it. And I'll tell you, without knowing more about what's going on in Durham, I really can't talk about, Greensboro, I really can't compare what they're doing with what might be happening here.
Well, there had been a rather active right. blog community in Greensboro to right. start with, and then the newspaper started adding more and more of its reporters and editors writing their own blogs. And
It's exactly the right thing to do, because the newspaper needs more and more radical experimentation. Mm-hmm. And because the business has been so successful for so many years, it's reluctant to experiment. But the main danger to newspapers is that it will not make mistakes fast enough, because you learn from your mistakes. And you've got to keep trying crazy stuff like staff weblogs. I have no idea whether it will work, but I'm so glad that they're trying it.
Yeah, I think Lex Alexander, one of the editors there last week, had this manifesto about how the blog should be in the place of it in the newspaper there. So if you want to join our conversation here, 1-877-962-9862. Ron is in Chapel Hill. Hi, Ron.
Hi there. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I've got a question, I guess, for Bob, but you hear things about national media conglomerates like Clear Channel Communications and about how they might have some political influences that are not quite as independent as they could be. And I guess the same thing could be true for small family-run businesses as well, but I was wondering if Bob could comment on whether Paxton is going to have any political bias towards one party or the other, or towards rich or towards poor, I guess, or pro-environment, anti-environment?
Yeah, I think the short answer is no. I mean, the Paxton Media Group, and I've worked with them for 4 years in Owensboro, believes very strongly in the autonomy of their newspapers, wherever they happen to be. And that was certainly the case in Owensboro. We made editorial decisions locally. We made news coverage decisions locally. We made decisions about community involvement locally. And I have every expectation that will be the case here in Durham and in Chapel Hill for us. It's a company that believes very strongly that the publisher and the editor on the ground in a community are the people best versed to make decisions about those sorts of things. And in terms of political bias, I mean, sure, we'll have an editorial page point of view, but I guess if there is a mandate from them, it's to be fair and to be thorough and to, I wish it were to listen to both sides. In fact, it's to listen to all sides. There are frequently more than two on any issue.
But Ron, I think your question was, does the corporation as a whole have a slant one way or the other, favor the Democrats or favor Republicans?
Right.
And would that carry itself out in and how you then write your local editorials here or cover state politics
here
in North Carolina?
I don't think so. That's what I tried to address, and I guess I didn't do it very well. Just for an example, in the last gubernatorial election in Kentucky, the Paducah paper, which is the flagship paper and edited by a Paxton family member, endorsed one candidate for governor, and the Messenger Inquirer in Owensboro endorsed the other candidate for governor.
Okay. Ron, does that satisfy you?
It does. I guess it's obvious it can happen, and people who are watching the SEC are starting to get alarmed that the ownership can get more and more, and so people could own the radio station and the newspaper in several states, and it just, if it can happen, then it probably will at some point. And just because it doesn't happen at Paxton doesn't mean it won't start happening in other locations.
Do you have any interest in radio or TV operations here in North Carolina? Does Paxton?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. They do have a TV station in Paducah where they have their flagship, but I don't think they have any. I really don't know. I don't think they have any radio properties here. One point I should make is that, newspaper, and Phil alluded to this, the corporatization, if you will, of newspapers is nothing new. This is the fourth newspaper I've worked for, and all of them at one point were family-owned, and none of them is now. I worked for the Raleigh Times when the Daniels family owned it. I worked for the Charlotte Observer long after the family that owned that had sold it to what was then Knight Publishing. I worked for the Center Daily Times just a few years after Knight Ridder had bought it from a family group, and I worked in Owensboro for a paper that was family-owned and then sold to a corporate ownership. And I'll tell you, there's some fine newspapers in America that are owned by corporations and some lousy ones that are family-owned, and vice versa. There's some fine family-owned newspapers and some lousy ones that are corporately owned.
I'd be curious to get Jacques Lauder and Phil Myers' take on this, too, because we had the News and Observer. It used to be the Daniels family owned it for eons. And now the McClatchy family out of California does, McClatchy Group. The Wilmington Star, owned by the New York Times. Yeah.
Okay. It's better to be owned by McClatchy than by the New York Times, because the Times company doesn't care much about its papers outside of Boston and New York. They just use them as cash cows to support what gives them the prestige.
But does that also give the local paper, such as the Wilmington Star News, does that give them to just do what they want to do?
They'll give them autonomy, because that's in their best business interest. There's a business reason for
that. So is that good in the bottom line for the reader?
Well, I think the Times tends to starve its local papers and not give them enough editorial resources. McClatchy, on the other hand, is a different story. They really like to produce good newspapers. I've got some figures here from 1995 when McClatchy took over the Raleigh News and Observer. And I was just looking at Durham County, because Bob has an interest in this. In Durham County, the Durham Herald lost 20% of its household penetration in that time. And the Raleigh News and Observer improved its penetration by 7%. So I think they're after you in your home county. And you guys got to be on your guard.
So it's dueling out-of-state families owning newspapers on North Carolina territory.
Exactly.
Jacques Lauder?
That's right.
Jacques Lauder?
Well, one thing, as the former publisher at this table, when I started my papers back in the 70s and the 80s in North Carolina, all of the small newspapers in this state, the 180 or so, were all independent, with the exception of your major metros. And what we have seen, I mean, I'm going to have to take issue, we are seeing the corporatization of the American media and the American small media, I think, certainly in the last 20, 25 years. And I think that is disturbing to me, because of what Ken Auletta of New Yorker says, the people as ants theory, that when you're flying from Paducah to Durham at 37,000 feet and you look down on Durham and you say, well, we're not making money, or we're not making enough money, so we're going to excise, we're going to delete X amount of people, you're just... you have this view that's quite different if you were the hometown owner publisher. I think that's a critical difference.
Just a general question about media, because we see this corporatization and consolidation of power in broadcast. Which do you think, which is having the more insidious effect, on broadcast or newspapers so far?
Well, I think... Well, it's hard to say, because I don't know that much about broadcasting. But newspapers are handicapped by their history of making money so easily. That's their problem. And they've had really good profit margins on the order of 20 to 35%, which is very unusual for a product that turns over every day. Newspapers should be more like supermarkets, which have margins of 2 or 3%, but they make a lot of money because they turn the product over every day. You need food every day. You also need a newspaper every day. And so newspapers have this artificially high profit because they tend to be monopolies. But they're not monopolies anymore, because there are other ways to get that message to advertisers. And so the reason for their high profitability is gone, and they're still trying to maintain it artificially, and that's what's hurting them. And that's what's... It's even corrupting the system of counting circulation, as there's a piece in the New York Times this morning about that.
Mm-hmm. About bumping up those figures. And I'm afraid that in our broadcast world, we've come to the end of our hour, but I want to thank you all for being with us today. Phil Meyer is professor of journalism at UNC Chapel Hill, author of The Vanishing Newspaper, Saving Journalism in the Information Age. Jacques Lauder is also a professor of journalism at UNC Chapel Hill. Thanks for being with us, Jacques. And Bob Ashley is the new news editor of the Durham Herald Sun newspaper. Thank you, and welcome to the Triangle.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And thanks, too, to Ken Ripley, who is the editor and publisher of the Spring Hope Enterprise. Thanks so much, Ken. Okay. And we welcome your comments at sot@wunc.org. Support for the State of Things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Melinda Pencava.